From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
There's a very clear choice for the people of Illinois. Whether you're Democrat or Republican really doesn't matter. Are you going to support the status quo, or are you going to support reform? And we clearly need to go in a different direction. And folks who argue that, you know, our proposals on reforms are, you know, extreme or hurting some class or whatever, it's just not true. That's political spin.
What has disappointed me is I wrote a second op-ed for the Tribune with 10 suggestions for Governor Rauner. The first one was send your campaign staff home and bring in people who know how to govern rather than campaign. Point 10 was, listen to your wife. I had 8 others, but those are the... He has done neither, which has been a big disappointment.
A big disappointment, says Newton Minow. He is a longtime Democrat, and I mean long. He headed the FCC back in the Kennedy administration, worked for Adlai Stevenson in the 50s. The Democrat endorsed Bruce Rauner for governor 2 years ago. This week he says he's disappointed in Rauner, and for good measure he's disappointed in Illinois Democrats, too. Before that, we heard from Rauner himself, dismissing criticism that his policy agenda is disproportionately hurting some class. We'll talk about that and more this week on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Our panel this week includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Dan Petrella, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. The company publishes the Decatur Herald and Review, the Bloomington Pantograph, Southern Illinoisan, Quad City Times. And Jordan Abadea, State House Bureau Chief for WICS-TV, the ABC News Channel 20 here in Springfield. Dan, Jordan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So this week, the governor, he's talked a lot recently about going around the filter of the media, if you will, and trying to get his message out. This week he did that on Facebook. It's where all the kids are, I guess, doing a Facebook live session. Jordan, can you just kind of give us a brief overview? What was the setting there?
Sure. So he came to us from Springfield in the governor's office doing his first Facebook Live. It started with a little bit of a scripted feeling, and I think that continued throughout the entire Facebook Live. But it started with Representative Tim Butler from here in Springfield asking him about what the state's going to do for the bicentennial that's coming up in 2018. So the governor used that time to announce the various measures he's taking, the executive order. He's creating a new office, named a new executive director, a new commission, and all of this is going to be in preparation for a big celebration that Illinois will have in a couple of years. But then he went straight into answering questions that he says came from people when they were promoting the Facebook Live. And those questions were very pointed and pointed in the direction of his turnaround agenda, basically giving him the chance to explain his turnaround agenda in all of its various facets to a audience that was at some points live 400, 450 people, 500. It goes up and down during a Facebook Live. But I mean, since then, that video has been viewed upwards of 10,000 times and that keeps growing. So I think he knew that he'd have an attentive audience at some points to lay out his plans.
It was interesting, too, because it kind of played, if you weren't listening or watching closely, a lot like a lot of his news conferences do, where he took the question and steered it back towards things like pension reform and school choice and all sorts of things that are, you know, more prominent or less prominent parts of his turnaround agenda. And, you know, there is just the logistical challenge of trying to speak for 20, 25 minutes, read comments and react to those. I think maybe if they do something like this again in the future, it might be good to have a staffer or somebody kind of monitoring the comments and feeding him questions if they want to have more of that live interaction, which is, I spoke with somebody at ISU who is an expert in this kind of stuff. And his response was that, you know, people come to these things expecting interaction with the audience, and if they don't really get that, then you might kind of turn them off. Although, based on initial likes and things like that, it seems like a lot of the people who showed up were people who are supportive of the governor.
Well, and that's just it. There were not questions here from, say, angry AFSCME members, state prison guards or anything like that, or human service providers who maybe feel that they've been the victims of the fight that the governor has waged to try and get his agenda through here in Springfield.
Right. And I know, I mean, I noticed a few recognizable names from around here at the State House in the comments. Emily Miller from Voices for Illinois Children comes to mind. I know she popped a comment in there. I think had to do with school funding. And it's, you know, if they're going to continue to do these things, they really do, I think, need to address some of those criticisms and make it more authentic, if that's kind of the mission that they're going for with doing this, rather than sitting down for a TV interview or a newspaper interview.
The Illinois Federation of Teachers was another one of those groups that put a question out there during the live part of the Facebook Live. And we did see a lot of comments coming from people on both sides who like Governor Rauner, believe in his agenda, and those who are very critical of his agenda. And the Illinois Federation of Teachers asked about his collective bargaining attacks, and that question went unanswered. And if you believe so strongly in these things, that local control over collective bargaining and prevailing wage is going to boost the economy and be good for the economy, I think you have to be willing to take on the critics. You can't just ignore the critics in your first Facebook Live, because I think that's where a lot of his criticism came from.
Well, Charlie, I know you've been following the State House for a long time. I don't think Jim Thompson, Jim Edgar, people in the past did not have to worry about Facebook Live. They were more interested in courting the press, but now there's this push to work around it. Do you think what the governor's doing is working here? Does he need to be exploring these alternative channels other than the, you know, so-called mainstream media for getting his message out there?
It's part of the whole operation. The governor has been in campaign mode from the day he declared, actually before he declared for office, and he's really spent more time on getting out a campaign message, including with the staged Facebook event where he was fed questions that had been screened, and he was able to get his talking points out. And it's the same technique he has when you reporters try to talk to him. You ask him a question, and he goes off on a tangent to talk about what he wants to talk about and not responding to your question. And that was a problem back in my day, too. But you had the ability to keep pressing people. You had more of an availability of folks. When Governor Thompson was in office, you could call the executive mansion of a night, ask to speak to the governor, and chances are you'd get through. I'm not sure that happens anymore. So I look at this whole thing
as... Have you ever called the governor's mansion at night trying to get to Rauner?
No, that does not happen
yeah,
anymore.
Yeah, not me either.
No, I have not.
Well, this whole Facebook thing, this is another campaign message, just putting it on a different platform.
Well, you talk about the governor being in campaign mode, and that's true both rhetorically. It's also true, certainly, with his personal spending. We talked last week about how the governor had contributed $16 million to Illinois campaigns, and this week that number has become outdated. Dan, do you want to give us an update on where the figure is now?
Yeah, I believe the last figure I saw was upwards of $20 million now from Rauner and his campaign fund to Republican candidates throughout the state. And just saw a news release in my email this morning from some folks who are supporting Democrats, pointing out that some of these Republicans, such as Terry Bryant down in Southern Illinois, has gotten $300,000 for her campaign from the governor. And a lot of these candidates are getting upwards of 80-90% of their campaign money from the governor funneled through the state party or the House Republican organization.
I think the figure I saw, too, was that 96% of the money in the Republican Party is coming from Governor Rauner. And that's huge. If you're railing against a Democratic system, which I think warrants a lot of criticism because of large donors and large amounts of money dominating the political system, you're talking about special interests. I don't know how you get away with that kind of money and then not seeing yourself and a few of your wealthy friends as a special interest in and of yourself. And so I think it does beg the question, how do you criticize a system and then fight against it? I think Governor Rauner sees his money as a way to level his playing field with Speaker Madigan, because for so long Democrats have outspent Republicans 3-1 in campaigns and it hasn't been very competitive. So I think the governor is just playing into a system that he wants to defeat ultimately with his turnaround agenda, but maybe not so much in the fact that he wants to get all of the money out of the political system.
Did you guys see that press release that I think it was the state Republican Party put out this week, earlier in the week, saying how Mike Madigan had donated $500,000 of his own money to the Democratic Party? Well, that came from his campaign fund, of course. And I don't know if I'm sure the irony was not lost on the people who wrote that, but obviously the governor has given literally, 40 times that from his actual own money, not just his personal campaign fund.
But yeah. Bruce Rauner's name does not have or does not elicit the same reaction that Mike Madigan's name does in Chicago politics. I think it's automatically linked to some kind of corruption that people believe is inherent in our political system here in Illinois. And so I think Republicans can get away with that. They can get away with saying, look what Mike Madigan did, $500,000. That seems terrible. Meanwhile, their own guy is putting in millions and millions of dollars.
And I suppose the flip side of it, too, is that Speaker Madigan and Senate President Cullerton have not spent millions and millions of dollars on ads trashing Governor Rauner, the way Rauner's money has been used to trash Mike Madigan. Madigan's been a lot less, what would you say, harsh in his criticism of the governor. He's not suggested, for example, that because Bruce Rauner is governor, everything has gone south since the day he took office. And so I think there's, as you said, a certain irony or a certain hypocrisy when you're criticizing Mike Madigan for giving $500,000 in campaign funds at the same time where the governor himself has funded 96% of the Republican operation, 20-plus million out of a total of 21-plus million.
And the Democrats would argue as well that, you know, a lot of the money that they get comes from organized labor groups, which the governor doesn't have a lot of love for. But, well, you know, their money represents money paid by thousands of members across the state. And, you know, they may be organized, you know, and led by unit presidents and statewide organizations and things like that. But, you know, it's the money that's funneling up from a lot of individual members.
Yeah, we've had a lot of talk this year about Donald Trump's, what I think some people have characterized as a hostile takeover of the National Republican Party. Certainly critics have said that. A lot of Republicans even feel that way. I think what we've seen maybe, or correct me if I'm wrong, have we seen a sort of voluntary takeover of the Illinois Republican Party? I mean, do Republicans seem to be appreciating that they're able to play now with this money in a more competitive way than they have in the past?
I think that's exactly what we're seeing. Republicans for so long have been the second place people to Democrats when it comes to raising money or their ability to raise money here in the state. And the way our political system is right now, you can like it or hate it, but that's the way it is money wins elections. You need a lot of money, and every year it grows to win an election. And so whether you're in a tight competitive local race or you're running a statewide race or you're running for federal office, you need money. And so I think Republicans look at this and they say, we have this man in Governor Rauner. We have a leader finally who is able to back us up and compete with Democrats in terms of money.
And I think part of it is you look at the governor's background. He comes from a private equity investor background where part of the operation is you find an ailing company, you go in and take it over. So he wants to get into politics. He looks at Illinois. He sees the Republican Party as being ailing, and so he bought it. And it's sort of a wholly owned subsidiary. And I don't say that in a harsh sense because his dollars have enabled the Republicans to be competitive. They've enabled the Republicans to put together kind of a ground game. Early on, he contributed lots of money to county organizations to enable them to improve their grassroots operations. And that's what you need to do with the party. That's something that Madigan for years has had with the Democrats. They've had a much more efficient ground operation than the Republicans.
And as I asked House Republican Leader Jim Durkin back on Governor's Day at the fair about, you know, the governor's money versus the money that Democrats raise, and the point that he made was that it's all money and it's all green, so, you know, it has the same power. And Republicans have taken a backseat to Democrats in Illinois for a long time, and maybe this will create some more competitive elections.
This is State Week. Our panel is Charlie Wheeler, Jordan Abadea of WICS News Channel 20, and Dan Petrella of Lee Newspapers. I'm Brian Mackey. This week, Governor Rauner held a news conference in which he sort of beat his chest a little bit about having eliminated the staff assistant position at the Illinois Department of Transportation. Can you... for people who haven't followed this, this is something that goes back to the Blagojevich era, really. Can you give us a brief overview of the staff assistant scandal?
Sure. These were positions that people were hired for outside of the normal channels of merit, and they were supposed to be not able to use political considerations in hiring these people, but they found that this had been done under both the Blagojevich and Quinn administrations.
So these are jobs that are like supposed to be for your policy advisor or your spokesman, jobs you'd want some people to have political loyalty, and instead they're what, cutting grass?
Right, they were doing like sort of, you know, more day-to-day office kind of work and things that, that didn't necessarily involve sensitive political advice or strategy or those kind of things.
So the governor makes a big deal about how he's eliminated these positions. The last people in these jobs got layoff notices last week. But apparently this was achieved in negotiations back in April with the Teamsters Union. And it's also come out this week that he is resisting an expanded role for a federal hiring monitor. Is this coincidental?
I think he probably wants to handle any investigations within the state and handle it within his office and have someone that he knows and trusts. I think anytime you bring in someone from outside, you're risking them finding something that you didn't even know about or digging up something that you perhaps wanted to stay buried. I don't think he has any bad intentions necessarily, but I think there is always the worry, and especially here in Illinois, you know, he's new. He didn't have a power, you know, 2 years ago, so he didn't know what was going on 2 years ago. And do you want to deal with Quinn's problems or Blagojevich's problems in your administration? Probably not. So if you can say, I'm going to have an investigation and I'm going to head it up, or someone with our administration is going to head it up, or someone I know is going to head it up, you can still then in one hand say, we're having an investigation and maybe control the outcome of that investigation in some aspect.
Yeah, that's the flip side of it, is if something comes up that doesn't look good, if you're controlling the investigation, guess what? That never sees the light of day. Whereas if it's an outside federal monitor, that individual is going to call the shots as he or she sees them. And if there's something embarrassing that's occurred since Rauner has been in office, the federal monitor would expose that. So that's, in my mind, that's why people in his position always want to be able to control the investigation themselves rather than have someone come in from outside.
The timing of the announcement was pretty interesting, too, because I believe the Associated Press reported that it was the same day that the administration had filed in court to get some relief from this federal investigation or the federal hiring monitor. And the way he wants to address it is by spending more in the Office of the Executive Inspector General, which is kind of a tough sell right now when the state has a lot of debates going on over how money should be spent.
Yeah, back when I used to cover the courts a lot more closely at the Law Bulletin, there was a lot of discussion about merit selection for judges. And the example that one dedicated opponent of that used to use is, do you really want Rod Blagojevich appointing your judges? And so anytime somebody tries to centralize power in the governor's office, yeah, it may be great if you're a Bruce Rauner fan and a supporter, you think that sure, he's going to do a great job on this, but you should always ask yourself, you know, he's not going to be in that job forever. And will the next guy who comes along, you know, should he be bound by, or she be bound by, other rules? Merit pay is another example people use. You know, yeah, the Rauner administration says it might do a good job administering that. You know, we certainly have seen other governors who might have found some ways to abuse that system. But speaking of merit pay, there was, Dan, you had a story about merit pay at the lottery, the administration touting this as something that works, something they're trying to expand in state government.
Right. And this is one of the things that they've really been pushing in the stalled almost for a year now contract talks with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. They want to reward state workers for productivity and for meeting certain quantitative measures of job performance. Apparently, under the Quinn administration, there's been a program going on at the lottery where if sales representatives hit certain targets, they can get a quarterly bonus. It's been somewhat popular with employees there. And the administration says, look, you know, this is successful. It's increasing productivity. We can expand this to other departments and get this going throughout state government so that, you know, we're actually encouraging people and giving them an incentive to do a better job. On the flip side, AFSCME says, well, how do you quantify the work of a child protection investigator or a prison guard or...
It's one thing if you're selling, you know, you have X number of lottery games that you have to get your quick and easy store in your area to adopt versus how many inmate cells do you search? I don't know how do you quantify that sort of thing for other types of state workers?
And I think we've seen in the private sector that incentivizing people to get work done doesn't always mean that the work is getting done in the best, most efficient way. I mean, we saw Wells Fargo employees creating false accounts and trying to hit their goals. You know, I've worked in the public sector where people have done those sorts of things or maybe skirted the rules around to make sure that they got their bonus at the end of the quarter. And so, you know, that begs the question is who's going to be overseeing that, who's going to be watching that inside government, and how do you quantify who reaches that goal or what that goal should be?
And one of AFSCME's points is that the administration hasn't been very forthcoming at the bargaining table about how exactly some of these programs would be structured, and that's actually the administrative law judge who said that they should get back to bargaining noted that on its pay proposals, the administration hasn't provided the union with all the information that it needs to do its negotiating job.
Charlie, do you have any great thoughts about whether merit pay is a good idea in state government? Is this something that's been tried in the past?
Not to any great extent. And the difficulty is, how do you find out a way to quantify work that involves other people in the sense of child abuse investigators? If you say, okay, we're going to pay you extra the more child abuse investigations you do, how do you make sure that those investigations are going to be thorough and are going to be in the best interest of the child if someone is just trying to rack up the numbers? And that's the problem. It's not, for example, if you're in a steel mill and your job is to straighten out angle irons, and you're supposed to do so many tons a day, and if you do more, you get paid extra. So you work extra hard to do, you know, the additional tonnage, and that's easily measurable. But in dealing with things like care for the elderly, counseling people with mental problems, you can't really quantify that by numbers. And you say, well, how about if we say we look at how many people you've talk to and how well they've done? Again, that's kind of judgmental. And I think the fear of merit pay in state government and in basically all government in Illinois is, given our history and our individualistic political culture, merit pay is seen as a way to reward favorites. If I like you, I'll give you merit pay. If I don't like the other guy, I won't. And there's always that concern, and I think that probably overshadows whatever value there might be in merit pay. As I say, particularly in areas that aren't as easily quantifiable as, say, a manufacturing production.
I would be shocked to find out that somebody was abusing the merit pay system in Illinois, Charlie. That's beyond the pale. Come on, that couldn't possibly happen. We are running out of time for our show, sort of a grab bag today. There hasn't been a lot of big news in state government, but there are a couple of little things that I want to kind of wrap up loose ends on. We've talked about in the past David Gill, the independent this time anyway, congressional candidate. He's run as a Democrat a number of times in the past, or I should say he wants to be an independent candidate again. Right now he is off the ballot, but he's making a last ditch effort at the U.S. Supreme Court.
That's right. His lawyers just filed a motion this morning with the U.S. Supreme Court to vacate the order that the appeals court put in place that blocked the order from the district court that put Gill on the ballot. It's all very confusing and tangled, but basically this is their sort of last shot Hail Mary attempt to get a spot on the ballot. They think that, you know, even though he didn't collect the required number of signatures, that he deserves a spot because the requirement for independent candidates is like 15 times what it is for a Democrat or a Republican who wants to be on the ballot as a congressional candidate.
Also want to mention this week that the Illinois Supreme Court announced that Justice Lloyd Carmeier has been elected to serve as the Chief Justice. Unlike in Washington, the Illinois Supreme Court Chief role rotates. It's generally a three-year term. His will begin later this year. He'll go for 3 years. He had a very tough retention fight a couple of years ago. A number of trial lawyer groups tried very hard with a last-minute, well-funded campaign to knock him off that court. It didn't work. There has been some controversy brought by some of these big groups that or these trial lawyers that have a number of very high dollar value cases pending before the court. So one of those cases is still proceeding in Southern Illinois. We'll keep up with that. And then the last thing that we want to talk about this week is former state representative Ron Sandag. Last week, after we taped the show, news came out that shed a little light on his resignation from the Illinois House of Representatives.
So we're slowly getting details on what happened with former state representative Ron Sandek's resignation. When it happened, everybody was very confused. There was initial reports that he was hacked on social media or fraudulent accounts were made, and he was just not having it. Since then, very redacted police reports have been released, and fewer details were known, but now those police reports are getting less and less redacted every time the media starts pushing. And so basically, Politico is reporting today that Sandek actually had a video that a few people saw on one of those fraudulent social media accounts. Some followers had saw that video. We weren't sure if the video with inappropriate behavior, that's all we know about it, was actually
real or not.
That
was Sandek's phrase, right? Yeah. He described it as inappropriate.
So Sandek described it as inappropriate. We know that these type of schemes that target high-profile people in power usually get them to do something in the sexual nature that would be embarrassing if they knew it was released. The Sandek isn't the first person that this is going to happen to, and probably won't be the last. But so we do know a little bit about this type of ring and what they do. And so more and more details are being released as the media keeps pushing.
Yeah, and he had, I guess, sent a couple of wired money payments to this extortion racket in the Philippines before deciding, okay, that's enough, and going to the police. So,
I think it should be underscored, though, that what former Representative Sandek did was of a personal nature. It did not involve his public office. It did not involve public funds. It did not involve public computers. It was something that he did on his own time. Yeah, it was probably a pretty dumb thing to do. On a personal note, I occasionally will get a request to be a friend on Facebook, and it'll be from some attractive woman. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, here's this good-looking woman, and she wants to be my friend. And I'm thinking, wait a second now. I don't know her. We have no mutual friends. No way in God's green earth am I going to click, yes, I want to be your friend.
Yeah, I saw a comment online somewhere when this news first came out that if you are a middle-aged man or older and a young, very young, attractive woman wants to friend you on social media, take a deep breath and take a look in the mirror and think about what really might be happening.
Yeah, exactly. The initial reaction is, your teenage self reacts, oh, yeah, this is great. And then your grown-up mind says, well, wait a second. As you say, look in the mirror. There's no way this is going to happen.
Yeah. And, with the cameras on all of our social media devices these days, who knows what we may all be carrying around these potential surveillance objects in our pocket. I'm looking at a camera on a computer right now. So that is our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Dan Petrella of Lee Enterprises, and Jordan Abadea of WICS-TV Channel 20 here in Springfield. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.